I'm sorry, we have no gavel. We just do the best we can. And if you can get seated and we'll get going, and then when we're all through, we'll eat again. But we were waiting for some people. Some of us went to the wrong place and we knew about that, so we delayed a while. And we all know about going to the wrong places, don't we? Now, sometimes there's a problem in your hearing. If you cannot hear me, please just wave really loud, hard at me. Not yet.
Jerry Sercano?
Yeah. They want to know who you are.
Who I am? I am Patricia Pearson. I am the first vice president. Mid Dornan is in Arizona at her grandson's graduation from the University of Arizona. So she could not be here, so she had me take over. I think I know most of you.
Yeah. But where's Jerry Sercanowicz? He's supposed to be up here. Jerry.
Well, I don't know, but we have to get rolling here. Jerry, you're supposed to be up here.
What'd he say? Oh, he doesn't want to be here?
Okay, we will start with the minutes. Okay.
So we're going to do the minutes of last year's meeting, not the April.
No, last year, general meeting.
The general meeting.
Yeah. The meetings from last year, May 20th, 2007. Meeting was called to order at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Mercy Catholic Church by the President, Mitt Dornan. Mrs. Dornan, welcome all, especially the kids present for the 8th meeting dedicated to the kids born in Point Richmond. Minutes of the May 18th meeting were read by Acting Secretary Patricia Pearson and accepted as read. Our treasurer, Sonia Darling, reported a balance of $14,571.72 in our account. $5,000 of that amount was contributed by Tom Butt for a kiosk, and $5,000 was received from Pride, P-R-I-D-E. Okay, the slate of officers presented for election for 2007 and 8 was President Mitt Dornan, First Vice President Patricia Pearson, Second Vice President Jerry Sercanowicz, there's Jerry, Secretary Mary Pontiac, Treasurer Sonia Darling, Correspondent Secretary Mary Heichel, Board members, membership Pamela Wilson, Editor Gary Schultz, Archives Bobby Joe Cullison, Staff Coordinator Margaret Markowski, Newsletter Thomas Mercer Hirsch. George Williams moved that the slate of officers be accepted as presented. The motion was seconded and the slate was unanimously approved. The Historical Plaque Committee. Pat Pearson reported that the first plaque for an individual home was installed at the Frosini House at 411 Contra Costa Street. Program. Mrs. Dornan introduced Don Bastine, Director of the Richmond Museum of History. Don presented a slideshow of early Richmond and San Pablo. Kids program. George Leroy Williams emceed the kid portion of the program. In addition to the 14 born in Point Richmond group present, a younger generation represented by Rodney Kendrick, Paul Chavitari, and Sidney Klutz, who had arrived at the meeting on their Hardys, were introduced. In response to the show and tell requested in the invitation, many brought pictures to share and had stories to tell. The meeting was adjourned and the group visited while enjoying the refreshments. Respectfully submitted, Patricia Pearson, Acting Secretary, last year.
Are there any corrections, additions? Okay, they approved this read then. Thank you. The treasurer's report?
The balance as of 4/30/08, was $15,975.82. And that includes the $5,000 from the Pride Fund. And our income this year was $7,226.27. And expenses were $4,916.42.
Any questions on that? Okay, we move into unfinished business. And the first item of unfinished business happens to be the Frazzini plaque, which you heard was installed. But then there had to be a big party, and so there was a big party. And three of the Frazzini family are up here in front. And it got dedicated formally in June of 2007. And it attracts a lot of traffic. He said, why is that car out in front of my house? And I said, yeah. They're reading it. They said, did they really make wine? I mean, it goes, it's really fun and very nice. I'm very glad you let us do it. The plaque for the Catholic Church, which was unveiled actually in 2005, but we never had anyone that seemed to understand how to install it, so we finally found such a person. And he installed it, and it was dedicated on Thanksgiving Day, 2007, and blessed by Father O'Rourke after the Thanksgiving Mass. So, under new business, any questions, stop me. Okay, I think I'm rolling. The slate of officers, is this exactly what Tom read? And I don't know if you want me to read them again. I will. And I'm just reading the officers because they are the ones that need to be elected. The board members are appointed. For president, Mildred Dornan. First vice president, Patricia Pearson. Second vice president, Jerry Sierkanowicz. Secretary, Tom Piazza. Treasurer, Sonia Darling. Corresponding secretary, Mary Highfield. Now, I can go by each one and ask for nominations, but I'd rather say, do you have any nominations from the floor? Believe me, some of these people would not mind.
Called volunteers.
Volunteers. Well, there are conscription like
yes,
you.
Well, that's true. I'm just out of town.
Tom's wife volunteered him. Is there any... Yes.
I move the slate of officers read to be approved unanimously.
Okay, is there a second? And so that's George Williams, Ruth Barkham. Okay, they stand approved the slate. Okay, the board members, they're appointed. Membership with Pam Wilson, editor Gary Shows. Pam is on a cruise. Gary's sitting in the back there with the 3D suspenders. Archives, Bonnie Jo Cullison. Staff coordinator, Margaret Markowski. And the newsletter and printing, Thomas Hirsch. We're continuing here with new business. On the May 12th, 2008, that's a week on Monday, there was a historic preservation awards ceremony at this museum in Richmond. And there was a program that started in the year 2000 and then sort of fell by the wayside. And so they revived it again, and it's to recognize people within the city who have contributed to historic preservation. And so one of the ones that won the prize was Donna Roselius, who started the Point Richmond History Association. And that was, she awarded the prize for that. Another win went to the Gateway Group that were in control of the Train Master Building. I hope you came in that direction. You see that beautiful garden. If you don't, go out past the plunge and you, or the bathhouse, depending how old you are, and see that beautiful garden the Mechanics Bank had. And they put a big festival on yesterday for everybody. And another of them went to the person who did, Margaret's on the ball there, did that pamphlet, designed it, the walking tour of Point Richmond. And we give many, many of them out at the little history building. And they're also given out at the Convention Bureau for people. And they're really used a lot. And the designer of that also got one. And then the other ones, we weren't from the Point. So, but they're all on here, and you can see this should you want them. And Donna came down from Oregon to get the prize, and it was a very nice party. What was it? Very nice party. Now to the historical plaques. The new one that we had sincerely hoped would be here today to unveil is not ready. It ran into some complications. Okay. It's very large. It's 20 by 30, and besides, by the time that Mary and Mid and I were part of the committee, and then each time we met with the group, they'd run through it, and we had to start with a full page like that and get it down to fit. And when we got it way down, it made no sense at all, so then we had to start adding back in. Like, here's a building. So we got it done, and then to really enhance it, there's going to be a picture on it of Mr. Dornan Sr. driving his very first truck from the Richmond Supply Company, a 1912 truck. And it's all been, Andrew Butt has done the work on it, and it will be in the upper left corner. Now this plaque that weighs 80 pounds is going to go on the side wall of the history building.
The building will fall down.
But not the plaque. And the man, Mike Cooper, who also did the one at the church and the Frasini one, is going to do it. He's going to have to tear the wall out inside behind the cabinet section, put in a big metal brace, and then anchor that through. Not only is this, it's just to keep it from being stolen, too. The bolts will come clear on through to that, and then the wall will be covered up again. And we just hope that it's not all going to be... But it will be really good. And Margaret, if you could come up and report on two more plaques that are in the works now.
Yes. About a year and a half ago, the neighborhood council had some money in their pocket that was burning a hole. And it was dedicated and collected to save the wigwags. And as I mentioned a year and a half ago, they voted to basically allow the History Association put together two plaques. One will be a short history of the wigwags themselves, and Andrew Budd has agreed to do the pen and ink drawings. And then the second plaque will actually be a short story of how the railroad decided to come to Richmond, and it will have a drawing on it of a railroad engine. And so we're hoping that we'll be working on that during the next 6 months.
So where's the wigwag plaque going to be placed?
They'll both be on in the garden for the reading room where the bank is.
Oh, okay.
And my recommendation to that group would be that we would put the wigwag kind of close to the wigwag area, and then the other one closer to the tree, you know, the whole story of how the radio system came. So that's the plans, and there is enough funds there.
Now, who is paying for these?
The neighborhood council has the money for the funds.
Okay.
And the Point Richmond Gateway Foundation will take care of the positioning and,
okay,
and advising on, you know, the basic.
Good. And this one that we're doing is being paid for by the History Association. Okay, now the last new business. There has been a club in this town for a very long time, 100 years, called the Women's Westside Improvement Club, and a lot of people's parents belonged, and probably even grandparents, and we have some members here today, and the club is celebrating its 100th anniversary, and is, as they say, arguably, I guess, the oldest women's service club in the state. They've had a few programs already to celebrate this, and there will be more coming. We'll get someone to tell us about that. But I'd like some of the members to stand up, and first our past presidents. I know we have Anita and Anna here.
Me.
Anita? Anita, would you stand?
Me.
And Mary?
Me?
Me? Me? Me? And Anna? They were all old ladies.
Liz? Were you a president at what time?
Yes. Yes. Were you president?
Yes. But it's hard for me to stand.
Okay, we'll just clap for you.
When we had the last meeting in the Westside Improvement, that was April the 1st, and it so happened to be my birthday, and then in the paper was a picture of me, and it said, 100 years old and still going strong. That was me. I'm only 96.
You weren't 100.
Then they thought I was a nurse.
And then we have a lot of members here. Some of those members would stand. In addition to the presidents here, Ann Bartram, Fulbert Bartram, her mother, Viola Fulbert, was also president. So we should have had Bruce stand. But anyway.
Here's Bruce stand.
Ann has a company from Belgium. So now we have the plaque. And Margaret is the president right now. And so this reads, the Point Richmond History Association congratulates the Women's West Side Improvement Club on its centennial celebration, 100 years of service to the Point Richmond community from 1908 to 2008. And this is signed by Donna Roselius and by Mildred Dornan.
Good.
And one of the first projects that actually happened in 1909 was the first Indian statue. It was done by the club. And we also helped fund the second Indian statue.
That's true.
After somebody messed up the other one.
Thank you, Pat. You know, they didn't tell me about this. This is a surprise.
Good.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The club would like to say thank you.
This is a part where anybody have any announcements or anything, questions? Anything happening?
When are we going to do the plaque, or do we know we'll hold it back till next year or something?
I don't think we should hold it back. If we're talking about when to do the plaque, it should be ready another week. What I was talking about, we had discussed, I don't know how long these other plaques are going to take. If we could do, like we did, if you remember, the first in 05, we went to different places, we could do all three of them at the same time and make a real festival out of it. Another party. So if we get a timeline from you, and ours is coming next week, and we might put it up. We have to put it up, because otherwise somebody could take it. That's why we have to get it up right away, but we'll try to do it. If, unless somebody's got a better idea, we can always do three parties. Do one for each plaque, that's fine too. And I'm certainly open for suggestions on that. Gosh, nobody has. Okay. I can't think of anything else to announce, except you know there are refreshments we will have later. And we were ready to get into our program, so the officers can leave. No,
retire.
Not leave, go to the...
You want us to go over there? Where did you say the officers should go?
Don't look so sad.
Where are we having the round table?
You don't have to move anywhere. You're on a panel.
Where are we having this panel?
Okay, so we have the guest panel. Betty Dornan. Where are you? June Beasley called me. She's unable to come. She will not be here. Bruce Bartram, George Williams, Mary Bianchini. And then I'm Patricia Bill, right?
Yes. You guys
will go back to the beginning. And I'm moderator. I'm not quite sure what that means. I hope we don't need any physical moderation. That's right. Okay, so I thought we'd start at this end of the table. Now, you get 5 minutes.
And oh, then, my.
Why, you want more?
No.
Well, I mean, that's it.
You're very generous. 5 minutes.
Well, no, that's the maximum. And you must stand up and project, okay?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, don't sit. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know there'd be so many here. Isn't that nice?
Well, that's wonderful. We're very happy there's so many here. And they came to hear you, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, we were going to tell about Point Richmond. So, way back when. So I came here in 1932. That's the best I could do. But we lived in Richmond. But we moved over here, and we were so excited about coming here
because of the hills and the water, and but it was a dead place. It was depression. And there were all these houses to rent. Everybody wanted to rent us a house. Too bad it's not that way now. And so anyway, we found a house down on Montana. I mean, we took that one on Montana. Then that didn't work out too well, so we moved to 205 Cottage. And that didn't work out, so then we finally stopped renting and bought a house. And that really just fell right into our lap. We bought it, but it fell into our lap. So we I had grandparents over here, so Point Richmond was not really original. I mean, as far as me looking around, I knew a lot about the point. But first thing we did when we came over, we went to visit the grandparents, and as soon as that was over, you know how kids are, after they visit somebody, after they say hello, they want to go out and play or go someplace. So there was on Santa Fe Avenue had a water slide from the bottom of the hill clear to the top. A wooden was about this wide. And we had to climb that for the first thing. Then we would climb the water slide, go over the hill, over to the beach. No homes there. It was all vacant lot. And so then we go down to the water and start turning over rocks and look for baby crabs or anything we could see under the rocks. And that was always the first thing to do. Then we would walk along the water over to the tunnel. Then we went to the tunnel. We would go through the tunnel to the plunge, or the bathhouse, or the natatorium, whichever you want to call it. We called it the bathhouse then, but it seems very crude now. And those were the good old days. Wednesdays was free day for girls. Thursday was free day for boys. And when you paid, you could pay after that. And when you did pay at the plunge, you could stay all day from 2 o'clock till 10 if you wanted to. But free day was only 2 hours. But we all looked forward to free day. And then at nighttime, the town was so dead, there was nothing to do. So we went to the plunge to go up to the balcony and sit there and watch the swimmers and see if we knew anyone swimming that night. So we could holler at them. Let them know we saw them swimming. Well, when they started to build, it was very interesting. I thought no one will ever build on the Tuscornia property. And there was a home. Remember when the first home was going up on Cypress Point? We couldn't imagine why anyone would want to build down there. And we talked about her. I think it was just a single person.
Oh, let's see. She's got notes. I don't have notes.
And it was the depression times, as I said. So we had to make our own entertainment. And my brother and his buddies would go to the grocery store or go wherever they could find a cardboard box, and they would get into the box and get to the top of these hills when they were dry in the summertime and slide down the hill. That was their entertainment all day. And then the interesting part, though, downtown, the firehouse and jail were here, of course. And the firehouse, well, there was a fireman there. And, of course, it was very little activity. So he had a police dog. He got a police dog and a ladder. And he had that dog trained, and he was doing tricks all day. And the kids would come downtown, and they would just love to watch them, that dog and his tricks. So, but the jail was really something. When they took somebody to the jail, I don't know where all the kids came from, but they saw somebody going into the, being taken into jail. There was a crowd watching, something like when something happens these days. Say if a fire truck is someplace, all the kids will see it. That was the way it was. And then where the flower shop is now, used to be there were two stores there. One was a shoe repair by Mr. Sonata, and then the other one was Bill Cooper, barber. And Bill Cooper was, I think a haircut was 25 cents for the kids, and he gave the kids a nickel every time they got their haircut so they could run and spend the money. That was pretty good. You could get a lot for a nickel during the Depression. And of course, Mr. Sonata had to go out of business when the war started. That was the end of that. Does anyone here remember Dick Furr?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mary?
I was going to say what they called him, but I don't know. Never mind.
Well, he had a figure like Santa Claus, and he had some kind of a grocery store. I never did see anybody go in, but he had fruit out in front of the store, so he would sit out there in his chair day in and day out. But he was a character, you know. He had this funny curl in the front of his head, on his forehead. And people going through town would stop. And naturally, it was an item. And they would take his picture, but he used to get so mad when they would put all these cameras focused on him. But I used to always say, I was young then, and I used to say hello to him. Hello, Dick, how are you? I felt so sorry for him being a sideshow.
About true.
You remember him.
You getting there?
Huh? You almost finished yet? The five of stuff already? Good. That was the end of the day.
That was really great.
Okay.
Okay, now.
Okay. Well, I'm going to come from a different direction than Betty. I am the daughter of Italian immigrants who settled in Fort Bragg. My dad was a logger, but because my brother was so sickly, the doctor suggested they move to a place that was more healthy, which was San Francisco. Can you imagine that? So we lived there for a few months, and Dad said that was not for him. So we went to Crockett, and he worked in the brown sugar. That lasted just a few months, and he said to Mom, that's as close to hell as he ever wanted to be. That coming from logging into there. So anyway, we came to the point where my uncle was, and I lived just up the hill from where my uncle lived, you know, many years ago. So with Mildred, we settled past the sewage plant around the bend, okay. And actually, we did not buy property there. We just sort of went there.
And more or less, like, you might call it a shack, okay? It was very hard on my mom. She had to carry water until they went over to Anita's mother's place, so they could move farther. So the time came, and the Richfield, who owned the property, said, you have to move. Glory be, that was the best day of my mother's life. That was a savior. So they bought a house up on, which is now Casey, was at the back end of Bishop Avenue. My mother thought she was in heaven, but it really was nice. So that was about 1928, and they paid $1,000 for the house, which was really, you know, think about it, was a lot. And we weren't there very long. My PG&E bill is almost that. I lost my trend of thought. Well, not too long afterwards came the Depression. And there you are. Okay. $1,000 house. Well, anyway, my dad had several jobs. He was without a job for about a year. And one day, I saw my dad sitting up. I was about 13, I guess, or so. I saw my dad crying, and I said to my mom, I said, what's wrong with Papa? And she said, well, he can't find a job. At that time, he was walking all the way to Oakland every day to look for a job. And that hurt me so bad. It has left a picture that is back in here, and it kind of makes me what I am today. And I never saw anything that hurt me so bad. But anyway, there were good days. Yeah, the jobs finally came. But growing up as a child, standing up on top of a hill, just forget all the new houses. Just think of those little old ones that you see. And it was kind of lonely. There weren't too many kids up there. And when you came home from school, you went up the hill from where the bus dropped you off, right? That bunch went that way. We went up Washington. The other kids went over there. And we didn't see the kids until maybe on the weekend, and we knew each other. But the place was a playland for us. I mean, nobody said you had to leave the property. We climbed the cliff, went fishing off of Cypress Point, rented a boat from Bono's, got out there, couldn't figure out how to get back, but we managed. And I was lucky enough to have a brother who was about as adventuresome as you could get. Why he did not kill himself, I don't know. Because Mr. Butts was the first guy to fly off of somewhere. My brother was the first one to fly off of water, up on Water Street. He took old sheets. And he made the wings, okay, and he waited for this windy day. It came, and he took off. Well, guess who came home? Tattered and torn. That was at the end of that adventure. But they made homemade diving bells, jumped off the Santa Fe Pier, and the way to get up was to pull a thing, you know. Oh, it was really something. So I always told Mom, I said, the only reason I'm here was that somebody had to watch my brother. And with all of that, he probably became one of the most talented, all on his own, made everything from scratch because we didn't know what it was to go to the store and buy anything, because if you made anything, it had to be a leftover. And so there we are today. But I just think, just imagine the point, really, no trees. No trees, because those were all planted by the people that came. Just sort of dry, windy days. Sometimes it was kind of lonesome. You remember the old days. But we had probably, I would not trade, even though things were pretty grim during our time, money-wise, I would not trade my childhood for anything that they have today. We had a lot of fun. And when fall came and winemaking time, it was great. We went from house to house, helped each other crush the wine, and then you know, we all smelled the wine, you know, the alcohol coming through the floors, and then press time. And that was our weekends. Everybody went walking, met at Ardell's for a beer or soda pop. So that's my childhood. But I wouldn't trade it for anything that they've got today. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Pat, for asking me to speak today. And maybe from Betty and Mary, I'll take a little different direction. And I'm going to use some notes because I can't even remember where I parked the car today. So how am I going to remember 75 years of nostalgia? But anyway, to think now there, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right, in the back. Thinking of the plunge, it's going to be remodeled very soon, and you'll have a place to swim. Well, I can remember the Point Richmond had 6 beaches, all swimming beaches, and I could maybe start with the one more distance. It was Brickyard Cove had a beach between Shipyard 3 and maybe where the Brickyard, apartments are now, the condominiums. And then we would move on to Keller's Beach. And I know this other Brickyard was very hard to go to unless you had a bicycle or really liked to walk. But then we moved going toward west would be Keller's Beach, which I think most of you know and realize where that is. And then following Keller's Beach, right around the corner, is Cozy Cove. On low tide, you could walk around, or on high tide, you could swim around and spend some time there. Then, going towards the Long Wharf at Standard Oil, you had what they call Cap's Beach, or Cappy's Beach. It was rather a nice place and low to swim. It was and then following Cap's Beach, going toward Centerfield Bridge was what we call Depression Beach. It was Blake Brothers Beach. And that was a very large beach, and I would say between a quarter to a half a mile in width. Very nice. It was sand and gravel from the Blake Brothers. They filled it in. And then following the last one would be Shrimp Camp, or Shrimp Beach. That was out by the San Rafael Ferry, in a little cove between Point Malati and San Rafael Ferry. So we were fortunate to have this choice of beaches to make. And then, thinking along the same lines, were the whaling station while we're out there. I never went into the state whaling station. I went by, and there was terrific odor, but there was Mr. Imlock, a gentleman from Point Richmond here, he was the manager of it, and we weren't allowed to go in, but we could go by. It was way out of Point Orient. And I might mention, too, I didn't introduce myself enough, but I was born in Point Richmond. I'm rather familiar with these things. And then getting back to ferry boats, Richmond or Point Richmond would boasted three ferry lines. One, of course, the Santa Fe wasn't open to foot traffic or auto traffic. It was just to furnish the transportation when the trains came in, and they took them out to Ferry Point and put them on a barge, and then the barge took them over to San Francisco, the cars, so the people would get off. Next to Ferry Point was the Southern Pacific, had a ferry boat and passenger and automobile ferry. It went to San Francisco, and it went until the San Francisco Bay Bridge opened, and then it ceased to operate. And then, of course, many of you will remember the Richmond-San Rafael ferry. And that operated, I think, until about 1956. That was a combination of auto and passenger. And it was fun, and you could sneak aboard and ride back and forth as children, and no one bothered you. So that was a pleasure to do. Looking out at the traffic on Washington Avenue now, when we... At one time, we were able to, almost any time of the day or whatever, roller skate. There wasn't that many automobiles in Point Richmond, and we enjoyed doing that. Hospital was in Standard Oil, had a two-story building in a hospital, which was on Standard Avenue in a refinery. And I delivered newspapers to a nurse. She lived there. And what went on, I don't know if the operating rooms or the treatment rooms or if they had beds for overnight stays, but it was a very spacious hospital from what I could see to deliver her newspapers and take care of that.
Where did you say the hospital was?
Pardon?
Where did you say the hospital was?
The hospital was Old Standard Avenue. I don't know if you're familiar with the office building. I guess, Mary, is it across from the cafeteria?
What's that?
Approximately a big office building up against the hill. The tanks, Frank? Yeah, on the left. See, it was on the way to
you pass Frank by it to go to the Brit.
Across the horse stable.
Yeah.
You went right by it to go to the dairy.
And the physician there was on call. He was known as, they used the different ones in the town, and his name was Dr. Richmond. So if they had an occasion out at the Rod and Gun Club, had an emergency, and they wanted him into the first aid, they wouldn't call the doctor's name. They'd just say Dr. Richmond to the emergency room. And
okay, we're getting there.
Pardon?
We're getting there.
Okay. And I just want to mention quickly that on Cutting Boulevard, we used to go as kids and help ourselves to bay shrimp. The Chinese would catch the shrimp in San Pablo Bay, bring them down here, put them on big pallets for a month or two, let them dry out, and then we, of course, would sneak in the back and just help ourselves to the shrimp. And also, herring and sardines that used to run in the bay.
Yeah.
You could dip them out in either out by the Ford Plant dock or the Southern Pacific dock out by the Park Terminal near Brickyard Cove. So they were very prevalent, and either netting or bucketing them out.
Right,
so conclusion is that we had offered a lot of activities to do at that time, and as soon as the war came along, they filled in, they fenced in, they keep out, and I don't think the children now would have the same to wander the hills and the beaches and the waterfronts like we did in Winehaven. Now it's very restricted. So we really did enjoy having those memories with us. Thank you.
Last but least.
No, you got free reign now.
I was fortunate to have my folks move from Salt Lake City, and I arrived here in 1923, the ripe old age of 1 year. And my folks left back there for the simple reason that when they did, there was about 3 feet of snow, and they retired. So they moved to Point Richmond. First lived on Washington Avenue in a small house behind Salise. I don't know if you know their name or not. Then we moved from there to the Mud Flats. The Mud Flats consisted of three homes. And there were the Williams, the Downeys, and the Saunders, and I think at one time the Harlows.
Yes.
And that whole area from Girard Boulevard to Point Richmond to Cutting Boulevard was all zoned to be a subdivision. They had streets, sidewalks, and the whole thing. And this is a wonderful place for people to come out and learn to drive. I mean, you see somebody out there every day learning how to drive a car. And it was a good place for the kids because we had right outside of our house a natural baseball diamond and a football field and a whole bit. And we lived there for many years, and then finally moved up to 55 Montana Street, the old Lee place. And that was a wonderful experience because they had all kinds of fruit trees, and they had big trees, and I remember I had my BB gun, and I did pretty good with the sparrows. I killed a few of those. One thing the schools around here, I think, were excellent. Washington School was one of the best I have ever, well, the only elementary school I attended, but I can remember every teacher that was in that school.
Mm-hmm.
From the, and in fact, I bet you probably wouldn't know them, but we had
Simmons?
Fenner, Simmons, Anglin, Swain, and the principal was Peterson. And they were all wonderful teachers, and always very fair, and always very pleasant. And I enjoyed that very much. And then one thing, after school, there was always a park and recreation person there that would provide baseball, football, basketball. So you had some place to go after school, and it was very popular. In the summertime, the park and recreation people were there all day long. So most of the kids were there. They'd play in the morning, go home and have lunch, and come back in the afternoon. If they didn't have that to do, then, of course, as Bruce mentioned, swimming. He went to a lot more places than I did. I've never even heard of some of the places. And also, fortunately, my dad, finally, he worked for Baker Moving, and then he went to work for Standard Oil Company. And they had the Standard Oil Rod and Gun Club. And that was a wonderful place for kids. You could go out there and spend the entire day swimming and picnicking, and they had fishing and the whole bit. And just around town, some of my best friends, one was Bob Dornan, Betty's brother, and Jeffrey Ross and Ken Cote. And we were very close, and we had our bikes to ride and the whole bit. And I think one experience I had, I came down Washington Avenue one day on my bike, and made a turn on Richmond, and unfortunately there was a car coming. It hit me on the corner and knocked me all the way across the street, and I missed the fire hydrant by about 6 inches. And the doctor, Dr. Lucas, who lived about a half a block away, he came running down to take care of me. He said, "You're a lucky boy, because if you'd hit that fire hydrant, you wouldn't be here today." But it was a wonderful place to live in Point Richmond. I mean, in the evening, in the summertime, when you the fruit was ripe, well, there were many places where you could find cherries and apples and all kinds of fruit, and that was a big thing for the kids. I mean, sure, we were stealing it, but the people didn't care. They had plenty of fruit. And I don't think I could have ever found a place where I enjoyed myself more than in Point Richmond. The camaraderie with the children, and we still know a lot of them today that we knew 60, 70 years ago. And if you ever had children, this was the place to have raised them. Now, I took a ride the other day, stopped by the museum over here and volunteered my services, and I thought, well, I'll ride around and look at my old places where I live. I went through the tunnel, went Western Drive. Quite frankly, I got lost. Because in the old days, you could go up the top of the hill, and you'd look down, there's nothing there. A few houses, Mage Hills, the Janes, and some of those, but no trees or anything like that. And quite frankly, I got lost. I had to backtrack to find my way out, but I think the people that are living here today are fortunate. I think you have a wonderful place to live. We moved, I left Point Richmond when I was about 16 years old. We moved up to Mara Vista in El Cerrito. But I did come back every day during the summer for that 1 month, rode my bicycle from El Cerrito to Point Richmond to play at the playground, baseball, football, whatever the case might be, because I was so attached to the friends and to the people that I enjoyed so much. But this is a wonderful place, and I think you're all very, should be very happy to be a part of Point Richmond.
I think it was incredible how each story was so different, but all meshed into having so much fun. Thank you. And my dad, my family moved into the house. George's family left out in the mud flats. Janice was here, was in the mud flats. But it was great because, as George said, it was all subdivided, but there were no houses, just the three houses. So we had a sidewalk. We could roller skate all over. We had sheets in the wind. And
the polywobs in the wintertime.
Yeah, and boats in the wintertime. My brother charged to ride in the boat.
Could I just mention one thing?
Certainly.
I remember we'd be around and we'd smell this odor, and it smelled like rotten eggs. And of course, it's a sulfur from the Standard Oil Company. And he said, "Gee, that's terrible." And that's all we thought. We didn't have to shelter in place. That was part of the way of life, and it didn't bother us so.
Until, yeah. Okay, now we're open. I guess this is where the moderation comes in. I'm sure some of you have things to add to this. Luciano, I'm sure, must have something.
Pardon?
Would you like to add to any of these stories? Shortly.
Well, Richmond, to me, is completely different from what I heard up there.
How was it?
Well, in Port Richmond, when you lived in Port Richmond, it was
It was worse, you say?
Because Fort Richmond was an outcast. North Richmond had all these farms that they grew crop twice a year. So if you lived in Fort Richmond, it wasn't very nice. My mother could have bought Coast to Coast for $50 during the Depression. And Ruth Markham, he delivered the Post Inquirer. I wound up with it after him. Delivering Fort Richmond. Yeah. It was a great place for kids to grow because we had a lot of places to go swimming. And what was nice, when we went to Brickyard Cove, that was a long beach. It started from the Yacht Harbor, Richmond Yacht Harbor, went all the way around to Yard 3. And the ships that came in from the islands could not keep the fruit. So they'd throw bananas, watermelon, grapefruit, and they'd all float 90% of the time in Brickyard Cove. So we'd go over there and get all the fruit we could eat. No, it was a great place. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Now maybe that's where we all grew up so well. We had all this fruit we stole off the trees and picked up off the beaches.
They did empty out.
Yeah, how about you, Tommy? Tommy Kenny?
That?
Yes. Have you got anything to add?
Oh,
I got
in my mind that I don't know where it's at.
Oh, and speaking of Tommy's cousin, Jim Kenny, he celebrated his 95th birthday at a wonderful party, and I was set up to interview him so we could, because he was mayor, he'd been supervisor, and he was a moving force in labor and the Democratic Party, and I was really eager to pick his mind. 95, he still had a very sharp mind. And 2 days before I would see him, he had a stroke. But Tom said, is he going to be coming home?
He's living about 6 hours down from our brother now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not in Richmond, part of the Valley. Right off the Valley, part of Richmond.
So we miss him. He never did miss a meeting here.
You can be there long. It's not supposed to be going back to France this weekend.
Oh, okay. And so Tom and Frank grew up above the spot, and Jimmy was born above the Central Pool Hall, right?
Yeah.
So that's, there must be, yeah.
If I had, I lived in the Bono House for 25 years. I bought it from Forty Campbell in 1974. And then I just want to invite anybody who's interested. I have taken pictures, stored pictures of Point Richmond, and had them blown up. A really good size. Mark, if you've been there, and some other people have, and you're welcome to come by and take a look at them, because you can almost walk into these pictures. They're so big. And I'm at 36 Railroad Avenue, if anybody wants to come by and take a look, please.
It's Jerry and Jan Figley. They have an office on Railroad Avenue and a beautiful home on Western Drive. Now, since 1974, you've worked your way up there.
Yeah.
Are there anybody else got anything to add here? How about Anita? Nothing to add.
I'd like something to ask.
Certainly.
I came into the museum the other day when I was over here, and there's a lady sitting there. I didn't know who she was, and a couple of fellas walked in, and this lady says, "Hi, Leroy, how are you?" I looked at her, and it was Anita. She could remember me from then. She said, "I remember me because when I was 5 years old, you were mean to me."
I'd like Mary to tell a story about when she and Anita were in Girl Scouts or Brownies, and how they could communicate since they didn't use the phone.
We didn't have a phone.
And how did we talk to each other then?
We Morse code.
We learned how to Morse code.
Mm-hmm.
But how did you do Morse code?
Well, we learned, you know.
I know, but how do you do two and three separate?
Well, she was on top of the hill and I was over on Bishop. And many of the times we'd walk up Santa Fe, which was halfway between her house and mine. And so we'd say goodbye and we'd let each other know that each one of us was okay, or if we could see each other on Friday or what, that sort of thing. And as we grew up and became teenagers, we'd go to the movies. And we'd get on the bus, come home, and of course it's dark. And we'd come up Santa Fe Avenue, and she went that way, and I went the other way, and we kept going, yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo, are you okay? Are you okay? Until I couldn't see her any longer. She was at the very top, and I knew that she was close to home, and I was close to mine, and we'd wave. That was our safety. We had our own way, you know, of doing things. But like I go back and I said, hey, those were wonderful days, really, really wonderful days. And we felt comfortable. And well, maybe for some, we did suffer a lot. I mean, things were pretty grim. But basically, for me, my home life was stable. My dad was stable, and we were comfortable. Dad was home, took care of us no matter what.
I remember thinking it was so great. We got all these free oranges at school, and we got free bus tickets. I didn't know.
Yes,
because we
punch
were poor.
Tickets, remember? Punch our tickets.
We had a punch. I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah, we were all the same boat. There was nobody there that had any money to speak of. But I never really noticed it a whole bunch.
What's that?
Being out of money, I mean, everybody was sort of doing
well,
that.
Well, pretty much, of course, Anita and I always remember the one girl. We laugh about it every now and again. And when I think back now, if that were me, I would have never done this. But we had one girl that was in our school. Her name, we remember it well, Doreen Rinaldi. Yeah. And she was very pretty. But her folks obviously had enough money, and they dressed her to the nines. 99 and 9/10 of us were big, even though some of the dads were working, but only like 3 days a week, so things were very, you know, sparse. But she came with her, what I call, Shirley Temple-type dresses, her Mary Janes and her fancy and the big bow on top, and we kids used to just envy her. She was the most popular girl. Got all the Valentines. But I thought, I would not have done that. But her mom and dad chose, and she was the only one in the whole school that looked like a princess. Her dad was in the bakery business at the time. But anyway, she grew up, and she got a divorce like half the population did. I mean, her life was... Her life wasn't as good as ours.
Well, we can have refreshments and talk some more. And I think, yes, Fran.
I'm Frances Smith, and I moved here after I got a divorce, Mary. I wanted my children to grow up in a small town.
Yeah.
And we lived at 119 Contra Costa, which is now the off-ramp of the freeway. They just took out those houses. My son John and the Morris boys spent the whole summer in cardboard boxes sliding down that hill. It's where Contra Costa is supposed to go up over the hill, but it doesn't. They did that all summer. And then one year I bought a two-man raft, and my son and the Giacomelli boys used to go out there in front of Gordon Camp's house, right? And they'd paddle around in that raft all day. So the point was still in place in 1964, 65, and 66.
And if you think a telephone is fast, if you got into mischief by the time you got home, your mother already knew it. So we had things faster than phones.
Well, my father did one thing to the house after we moved in, George moved up. He put a chicken wire over all the windows in because we had all the big baseball diamond there and we were getting too many foul balls. We couldn't afford to fix the rental house windows. But he was very good with all. My father worked 4 to 12, I think, on purpose, so he'd be home all the time to play baseball with the kids. And
we made
brother.
Our own fun, didn't we? Yeah,
my two brothers. So that's it. We're adjourned and free to do anything. We have all nice things to eat and drink and visit. And thank you so much for coming.